Speaking on this program is Brother Winford Claiborne.
Thank you and good morning. Since churches are so directly tied to homes, then churches must always be deeply concerned about the quality of homes which compose those churches. This means that preachers and elders and all other church members must have as one of their goals the teaching of the whole counsel of God. Preachers are to teach from the pulpit what the Bible says about marriage, divorce, and remarriage. They are not to compromise the truth of the gospel to prevent offending their listeners. Elders of the church are to provide the leadership which will make homes stronger and prepare young people for the responsibilities of marriage. In every way, Christians are to work for better homes in our nation. Please remember that the influence of even one good home in a community can make a difference. When controversial issues which adversely affect the home arise, elders, preachers, and others should have the courage to take a stand on the side of right and truth. There are people in all communities who are not particularly religious. They certainly would not call themselves Christians. But they are deeply disturbed about the deteriorating morals of our nation. They are angry when their homes are invaded by thieves, when their sons and daughters are sexually molested, whether by strangers or by friends and family members. They know that sexual promiscuity and homosexuality are destructive, and not just because of the threat of AIDS or of genital herpes. Many of these people are crying out for leadership from churches of our land. I urge the churches of Christ to provide the moral and spiritual leadership for the people of our nation and for other nations. You may think I am being too pessimistic when I affirm that many modern churches are unwilling to take a stand on controversial issues. Even some churches of Christ are now insisting that they do not want controversial issues discussed from their pulpits. Let me give you just one example. In the 1970s, the Equal Rights Amendment was the center of attention all across our land. A Georgia congregation had asked me to visit on a Sunday and to speak on the ERA, the Women's Liberation Movement, and the Gay Liberation Front. Just a few days before I was to speak, I received a call from one of the elders informing me that the elders had decided to withdraw their invitation. The elder who called said that the other elders had given two reasons for withdrawing their invitation. First, they were afraid that they might have to face a lawsuit from some of the radical elements in Atlanta. I wonder how that eldership would have fared in the days of the Roman Empire. The second reason was that the elders did not want any controversial issues discussed from their pulpit. Do you suppose that they know any other kind of issue? Do you know any topic that is not controversial with someone? If you do, please let me know, because I do not. During the same period I have just alluded to, I was active in speaking out on the Equal Rights Amendment on our radio program at Dalton, Georgia. I was seeking by moral persuasion to involve the other preachers in Dalton. The Dalton Ministerial Association apparently began to feel some pressure, either from our radio programs or from their own members. The members of the Ministerial Association had a meeting to decide what their position on the ERA ought to be. Then they published an article in the Dalton paper in which they said that there was no definitive position on the ERA. In other words, they decided that they could preach the truth either way. What a tremendously disappointing decision for preachers to make. Many of their members stood with us in our fight against the women's movement. The members of those groups also expressed to me their unhappiness, that their preachers were unwilling to take a stand for the family and for their country. These incidents remind me of a cartoon I found in one of my books. Dr. Frankie Gabelin, the former editor of Christianity Today, edited a book with the title, A Christianity Today Reader. The book consists of a compilation of articles which appeared in Christianity Today between the years 1956 and 1966. In this volume, there is a cartoon of a modernistic preacher pretending to act like Martin Luther when the great reformer nailed the 95 Theses to the church door in Wittenberg, Germany. The caption for this cartoon reads, "Here I stand, at present, I think, but then again, I could be wrong." Some churches of Christ, and some other religious groups, seem to want to be above the fight against pornography, beverage alcohol, abortion, prostitution, the cleaning up of television, and such like. Everyone should be able to understand how each of these activities constitutes a threat to the home and to our young people. How can churches or individuals think they are supporting the home when they refuse to take a leadership role in these abominable evils? So often we sit on the sidelines and complain about all the evil that afflicts our society, and then do precious little, if anything, to make changes. It is high time that we help homes by destroying the enemies of the home. But there is more to be done than simply removing the thorns and the thistles. The churches must have educational programs which include preparation for marriage and for family living. I have made a practice for the past 9 years to ask the students in my marriage and family classes at Freed Hardeman College how many of them have worshipped in congregations where mate selection, courtship, human sexuality, and such like are discussed from the pulpit or taught in a concentrated way. The numbers of young people who have attended such congregations are very small. I have not kept an exact record of their responses, but I seriously doubt that more than 15% of our splendid young people have ever really studied marriage and the family. I recognize some problems for churches which decide to have a formal program of family life education. Let me mention some of the difficulties which most churches would face if they started such teachings. First, many churches would not find it easy to get qualified people to teach the classes. Those teachers have not done adequate research in the area, and they do not know the teachings of the Bible on marriage, divorce, and remarriage. Very few church members have enough information about human sexuality, and many would be uncomfortable discussing it with almost any group. Elders should be very careful in selecting teachers of marriage and family classes to be sure that the teacher has the right attitude toward marriage. If the teacher is soured on marriage or on men or on women, he would not be qualified to discuss such a vital topic with young people. A radical or moderate feminist would do more damage in a short time than could be corrected in a lifetime. The elder should also select someone who genuinely loves young people. If a teacher of teenagers does not love teenagers, why would he be teaching them? The person who thinks that all young people are going to the dogs does not need to be teaching any subject, but especially not marriage and the family. Most important, the teacher of marriage and family should have a good marriage himself. A teacher of marriage and family sociology in one of Tennessee's state universities boasts to his classes about his 3 marriages. How could such a man teach what young people need to know? His influence would unquestionably be detrimental. He or she is making a mockery of the sacred institution of marriage. A second problem which churches face if they decide to initiate a course on marriage and the family has to do with the scarcity of good teaching materials available. There are literally hundreds of books on marriage which are readily available, but many of these books teach moral values which are unchristian and anti-biblical. Besides, many of these books are not adapted to the various ages and groups which so desperately need such teaching. When I do workshops on the home and on human sexuality, I am often asked what good books I can recommend for young people. It is unfortunate that not many are available, not many are being published. I sincerely hope that condition can be corrected in the near future. Why are we not producing good books on this vital subject? Could it be that many church leaders do not think it is very important? I assure you that there is a tremendous interest among our young people on this topic. There also are highly qualified men and women who could write good material. We may excuse ourselves by pleading a lack of money or a lack of time, but we absolutely must get busy preparing good material for our children and young people. The Churches of Christ and other religious groups may create an atmosphere which stifles honest questions from our young people. In my marriage and family classes at Freed Hardeman College, I always tell my students that they are free to ask any questions which are troubling them. If any question arises which they would like for us to discuss in class, they are free to ask whatever they wish or to make whatever comments they have on their minds. Here are some samples of the questions I have been asked. Is it true that it is almost impossible to go a long time without engaging in sexual activity? I hear it can hurt a guy. Please discuss how far a couple can go when they go parking. What is your opinion of necrophiliacs as pertains to adultery? Is the act of having sex with a corpse considered adultery and therefore grounds for divorce? What is your opinion of the intrauterine device? Is it an abortifacient? If a person has premarital sex, should he or she tell the person he is marrying? My students have asked questions about transsexualism, transvestism, incest, homosexuality, pedophilia, genetic engineering, surrogate mothering, and dozens of other topics. These questions are not just philosophical or theoretical interests among our young people. They are of serious concern to so many in our society. Do we, as preachers and parents and elders, have an obligation to answer the questions our young people are asking? Or are we going to tell them that they do not need to talk about such matters? When they hear sexual matters so freely and frankly discussed on television, they have a right to the information from people who have high moral values and who know the scriptural answers to give. We must not neglect to answer our young people's questions. But what strategies should we use for dealing with marriage and family? If we teach on the subject, either from the pulpit or in the Sunday school class, only once every 15 or 20 years, we are not getting the job done. Let me illustrate how foolish it is to wait too long between classes on courtship, mate selection, and human sexuality. You may have in your class or in your home a little guy of 9 or 10 who has no interest in girls. In fact, he may think that girls are totally unnecessary and a nuisance. But give him 4 or 5 years, and he cannot understand what has happened to him. Those lovely creatures which he thought were so unnecessary to his happiness are now so very attractive to him. If we wait 10 or 15 years between classes on marriage and the family, we could easily lose a whole generation of our young people. Young people's classes, whether in regular Sunday school or in vacation Bible school, should be devoted to teaching on marriage. In the first place, most young people are intensely interested in the topic and are more likely to be attending church services and Bible classes if they are learning about marriage and the family. Youth rallies that I have attended and at which I have spoken are often used just for motivational purposes, which are needed. But we should also use these gatherings to talk about dating and marriage and mate selection. In addition to Sunday morning Bible study and Wednesday evening Bible study, churches would do well to have seminars, workshops, and other special teaching on marriage and the family. I have been privileged to do between 7 and 10 such workshops a year for several years. Young people are almost always interested in these workshops, and they usually attend them well. I have just completed a workshop on the home at the Florence Boulevard Church of Christ in Florence, Alabama. The average attendance at each service was between 450 and 500, which shows the great interest that both old and young have in their homes. If you are really interested in increasing church attendance and interest, workshops on the home will generally aid in that direction. Another important step in teaching on marriage and the family is to send your children to a Christian college. The reasons for such a recommendation are many. Not only are our marriage and family courses taught from a biblical viewpoint, but so are all other classes on our campus. You would not find at Fried Hardeman College any teacher who ridicules the Bible and its inspired teaching. Nor would you find a teacher who makes fun of marriage and who teaches young people unchristian moral values. Teachers with severely troubled marriages are simply not invited to teach in our Christian schools. Let me mention one other distinct advantage of attending Christian schools. The students on the campus at Fried Hardeman College have dozens and dozens of teachers whom they can consult if they're having problems in dating, mate selection, and such like. I know teachers in the Department of Communication, as well as in psychology or sociology or in Bible, who spend countless hours counseling with students. We also have teachers who provide premarital counseling for our splendid young people. We have specialists in marriage and the family, in finances, in law, in psychology, and in the Bible, who are willing to give of their time to help young people plan for good marriages. What a tremendous blessing this is and should be to our students. But the chances of having this kind of counseling available on a state college campus are very slim or non-existent. Another very important consideration should be the married Christians who demonstrate how marriages should be lived according to God's truth. Nothing is more powerful than good Christian examples. Our young people need to see couples living together in peace and harmony. I can remember, as I was growing up, how certain couples had marriages that I wanted my marriage to be like. Of course, I also knew some couples who were always fighting. I can remember wanting a marriage that was certainly different from those marriages. In our lesson today, and the one last Sunday, I've talked with you about what churches can do to support Christian homes. I'm deeply interested in that subject, or I would not have spent so much time researching it and discussing it. But lest you get the wrong impression, let me say emphatically that I believe the main responsibility for teaching on the topics I have been discussing with you rests on the shoulders of parents. Both the Old and the New Testaments make that truth very plain. Churches, child care centers, and the schools must not become substitutes for the home. Too often our homes are just filling stations for the stomachs of our children. Dr. D. Martin Lloyd-Jones, an English theologian, argues that a home should not be a place where children spend their holidays. No organization or institution can replace good fathers and good mothers. Dr. Harold Voth, a senior psychoanalyst and psychiatrist with the Menninger Foundation, insists that mothering is probably the most important function on earth. Parents cannot wait for someone else to teach their young people about marriage and the family. Although the home must be the primary institution for rearing children, which includes getting them ready for family living, the church must assist, encourage, strengthen, and support the home. The church must never engage in activities which are destructive of home life. But I can assure you that some churches do, even though they almost certainly do not intend to. Let me illustrate what I mean. Some churches have so many meetings and other activities that husbands and wives do not have time for their families. My friends, you cannot attend some kind of meeting every night, even if it is a church meeting, and to have a good family life. Good relationships take time to build, and that includes the husband-wife relationship as well as the parent-child relationship. Unfortunately, some of us preachers are the worst offenders in this respect. We feel that we have to work 70 to 80 hours per week to do the work of the Lord. That many hours will not leave much time for wife and family. Obviously, I am not attempting to prevent anyone's working diligently for the Lord. But taking care of family duties is also working for the Lord. But just how much does the church mean in the lives of young people? What changes could it make if they really are taught about God and His Word? In 1955, Dr. Benjamin Fine, then education editor of the New York Times, wrote a very stirring book with the title, 1 Million Delinquents. Dr. Fine talked at length about the fact of juvenile delinquency and its causes, and then made these observations. The effect of the church is salutary in maintaining good community relationships. There is no question that it is desirable to encourage our youth, the teenagers as well as those of all ages, to go to church with their parents. Families who pray together, stay together, is a slogan based on sound common sense. Parents who do attend church regularly are less inclined to live in constant tension. Page 229. In the late 1970s, Truman Dollar, a fundamentalist Baptist preacher, and Dr. Grace Ketterman, a child psychiatrist from Kansas City, published a little book entitled Teenage Rebellion. These authors mention the fact that in the 1970s, 3 of 4 marriages ended in divorce. They reveal in their book the results of a national survey relating to divorce and its association with religion. Please listen carefully to these statistics. When both husband and wife attend church service, the divorce rate dropped to 1 in 55 marriages. When the husband and the wife are really active in their church work, that is, when they pray together, read their Bibles together regularly, attend all the church services faithfully, the rate of divorce dropped to 1 in 1,018 marriages. I do not know how scientific this survey was, but it does lend credence to the slogan that I read to you a few minutes ago from Dr. Fine. Families that pray together, stay together. The judge of Nashville's Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court for many years was Sam Davis Tatum, an outstanding juvenile judge and a faithful gospel preacher. I shall not soon forget the privilege of hearing Judge Tatum at Mayfield, Kentucky, when I was just a young preacher. Judge Tatum made these observations about juvenile delinquency and about church attendance. There is nothing so fraught with power as the church and the saving of the youth of our land. Since I have been judge of the juvenile and Domestic Relations Court in Nashville, Davidson County, Tennessee. I have tried approximately 8,000 boys and girls under 17 years of age for violating the law. Of that number, there has not been a child in the court whose father and or mother went to church and or Sunday school regularly. Of that approximately 8,000 boys and girls under 17, only 41 of them went to Sunday school or church regularly. My friends, if these statistics do not challenge you, I do not know what would. As we close our discussion today of the topic, "The Church Supports the Home," let me summarize briefly the major thrust of our discussion. First, the church must have, and it must support, the preaching of the whole counsel of God, Acts 20:28. If mate selection, courtship, human sexuality, marriage, divorce, and remarriage are Bible topics, and you and I both know they are, how can we pretend that we're preaching the whole counsel of God if we neglect these topics? Compromising and mediating preaching simply will not get the job done. Second, elders of the church must be concerned about preparing young people for marriage and about resolving the difficulties related to troubled marriages. The elders do not have to do all the teaching on these topics, but they have to see that the teaching is done. God will hold the elders accountable for the sheep in their flocks. They are to provide for all the needs of the flock, and that means teaching about marriage and the family. Third, the church must not be afraid to take a biblical stand on controversial issues. Homosexuality, beverage alcohol, gambling, the women's liberation movement are destructive elements in our society. They are not only enemies of the home, they are enemies of every aspect of our country. The church must speak out against these great evils. Fourth, educational programs of the church must include continuing classes on preparation for marriage and family living. Our culture has almost made an idol of meeting the needs of mankind. But one of the greatest needs we have is to be able to live peacefully and successfully in our families. Why are we neglecting that need? Please remember the influence that the church has on homes. Where God is the center of our homes, they are more likely to be happy and useful. May God bless the homes of America. We thank you for listening today. We invite you to listen again next Lord's Day. Until then, may our Heavenly Father richly bless you.